Hey, this is Ashley Farode, and you're listening to Behind the Bio, the podcast about the people behind the professions. This is episode 8, and it features none other than Vicky Cotter. I say none other because Vicky is a one of a kind. She runs major festivals throughout Canberra and, in fact, all of Australia. These include Floriade, Enlighten, the Noosa Jazz Festival, and many more. You'll hear about those throughout the podcast. But the great thing is, she's very much behind the scenes and, in fact, is very modest about her work, so much so that it took me quite a fair bit of convincing to get her on the program. But I'm so glad that she did decide to come on and share her story with us, because it's really enlightening, not only in terms of how her career progressed, but also the insight into programming and the world of major events. Can you actually believe this is episode 8? I guess time flies when you're having fun, and I really wanted to thank all of you for the great words of support, the feedback that you've given across all the different platforms, and for listening to this podcast. I really, really appreciate it. I'd like to thank the Coordinate Group for making this podcast series possible. Well, without further ado, here's Vicky Cotter from Fizzabelle Events as my next guest of the Behind the Bio podcast. Vicky Cotter, welcome to Behind the Bio.
Thank you for having me. Very exciting to be here in my lounge room.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's a very hot, nice, toasty lounge room at that.
Thank you. It's freezing outside.
Beautiful. Hopefully I don't get too sleepy. That's the only thing.
I could turn it off.
Now, I was really keen to speak to you because you represent the world of events and productions probably better than anybody that I know. Now, am I right to say that you're at a core a producer?
Yes, I like to say I produce festivals and events. I love it, and I have been doing it for many years now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Well, so the reason that I thought I'd say that is because not everybody might be familiar with you. And like a true producer, you're actually quite behind the scenes, which we'll get to later on. But the things that you do are absolutely massive. So people would know you through the things that you do, but probably not you personally, because you're there making sure this stuff happens rather than being the star of it.
Absolutely.
So Floriade, Enlighten, Canberra Balloon Festival.
Done a few. So we've got our Taste of Kakadu that we do, which is an amazing experience. So if you haven't had the opportunity to go, that's a beautiful event. Started off at Blues Fest, Vivid Sydney, just a few festivals that we did, Canberra Writers.
Just little ones. I mean, I mentioned all the Canberra ones that I'm familiar with, but there is so much. And the company that you own is called Fizzabelle.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Right now I'm sure that every Canberran is like, oh, right, that person, this is going to be fun. So maybe we'll talk about the events, but I guess there's two sides to it. I think it would be an interesting insight into the world of what it is that you do to put something like as massive as those events that you just spoken about on. The other side of it is I think people who might be interested in getting into the world of production or producing and events, not from the artist side, but from the technicality side.
Absolutely.
So maybe starting off at the very beginning, how did you get into doing this?
That is a really good question. How did I get started into festivals and events? I originally started as a musician, and I have been playing the piano since I was 7. And originally I thought I was going to take the path of being a performer. And I committed to that for many, many years. I had a band. I used to play at Champions Bar. I don't even know if that exists still, but I used to perform at Champions Bar in Woden. Mm-hmm. In my duo, which was great as a teenager. And then I went off to university and I studied music degree. And in my music degree, I met this amazing woman who was teaching me entertainment law. And from there, it kind of opened my eyes up to many different, areas of the world of festivals, events, music. And I fell in love with intellectual property and copyright. And I thought I can actually help my colleagues because it's something that I just understand. And I thought, oh, well, I'll go and study a law degree with a view to helping out musicians navigate, you know, the world of the entertainment industry. And I went and studied law, completed my music degree and studied law and got all the way through it. And then I went and practiced as a solicitor. Mm-hmm. And my first job was actually at HarperCollins Publishers, which was brilliant. And I did all of the artist or the author contracts for them. And then I went and practiced as what I thought you needed to do was be a real lawyer. So I thought I'll go and be a real lawyer and practice in a real law firm. And I got to do everything from criminal law to torts to, you know, family law. And I really did not enjoy it. there was a lot of, I guess, you're resolving people's disputes and there's a lot of conflict and I'm really not that person who likes the conflict or the arguments. So for me, it was great to have the law behind me. And I got a call out of the blue from that same lecturer who, it's amazing how life works, that same lecturer who I met all those years before. She was working at the Blues Fest in Byron Bay and she called me up. It was honestly 2 weeks before the Blues Fest was going to start. And she said, I need someone to come and help me do the artist contracts because I haven't done them. And I thought, excellent, I'll be there.
Sure.
So I went up to the Blues Fest and I got to do all of the artist touring contracts for the Blues Fest in 2 weeks, and mm-hmm. that is where I just found my home, I guess, found my spot. And I loved festivals ever since. It married the music, it married the law, it married the business all together. Mm-hmm. And my mum would say that I've actually always been a producer ever since I was little, because I would always corral my cousins into the most spectacular Christmas productions that everyone had ever seen.
And so, everything was legally sound. Contracts were signed, yeah. No problem.
Yeah.
So, Jerry performing next to the Christmas tree, don't worry.
Exactly.
Contract is fine.
Exactly. It was a great, I guess it was just a really great circle for me to have that background and all that experience to be able to then come and find, you know, excellent, this is where I fit.
Two quick questions. The music, did it get completely parked during the time that you became a lawyer, or did you kind of practice music during that time? And the second question is, how long did it take you through your legal journey to kind of discover that that's not really the thing that was, you know, working for you?
So I'll answer the second question first. It really didn't take me very long at all to figure out that law wasn't for me. When I say very long, it was about 3 years. Mm. So
it's a fair amount of time to give something a go, to kind of realize you've given it a proper go. You didn't just exit out in the first moment you didn't like it.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, obviously it wasn't the right thing.
No, it wasn't the right fit for me. And I'm still grateful for the studies and the work that I did and having the experience, because it's all led me to where I am now, and all of those skills help me every day in what I do. And then I guess in answer to the first question, which is probably the harder question, there was a lot of emotion tied up in that decision to let that dream go. When you've had something for your whole life that you've worked on, I really agonized over that decision to not be a performer any longer, and to work in the business side of the industry. And there was that closure, I think, when writing my CD and producing that, but it took a long, that was a hard decision to make. But when I made it, I felt like I had chosen the right path for me. And I guess everything, again, all the things that you learn and all the people that you study with, it's amazing how you run into those people still, and they're all performing in the industry. So, you know, it's a really great way to still work with these people who have gone on to do amazing things in their career, and to be able to work together in a different way, in a different format.
And I guess starting off as an artist and then moving through to law, even though they're slightly different ends, you understand the craft, you understand what being an artist is like, which is a very important insight probably to have when you were doing all the work that you were doing.
Yep.
So what was the actual stage in which you got the chance to transition to actually producing or being involved in an events festival, but not from the legal side, but from all the other sides that you've mentioned before?
I feel like Blues Fest for me was, I was with that festival for a while, and I worked my way through from doing the contracts and then developed all the way through. One of the key projects I had to do was project manage the site build for that festival to its home at Tiagra. So I got to learn all about DAs and, you know, light poles on Pacific highways and Wallen froglets and, you know, heaps of different things that I never in my life thought I would ever learn or know or do, how to construct roads and the best place to put them, which is not connected.
Town planning.
Exactly. Going to lots of meetings with council and, you know, brilliant experience. And when I left the Blues Fest, I got approached to be the executive producer at Vivid Sydney when it was in its second year.
Can I ask, at that point, did you already establish Visibel, or were you working as like a freelancer? How did that work?
So I had established Visibel and Events New South Wales, as they used to be called at that time. They were my very first client, which was fantastic. And I kind of found, and I guess my company's maintained that throughout its journey, where we can work quite well, really closely with government departments, where we essentially become, we work really closely with them developing their events and producing their events alongside them and their teams. And that was still an amazing experience. And, you know, to be involved with, we had Laurie Anderson and Lou Reed, who were the artistic curators at that time for the festival. And, you know, to be able to work with them and the designs that they created for the Opera House. And I still remember Laurie Anderson, she created this piece called Music for Dogs. And it was this big piece of music that only dogs could hear, and it was on the steps of the Sydney Opera House.
Really high-pitched?
Yeah, we couldn't hear it, so we were hoping something was happening.
It's like those weird whistles that people use.
Exactly. So it was a whole musical piece for the dogs to enjoy, and that was a really amazing success to just see all of the dogs that came out to enjoy that piece of music. And then working with that team, I stayed on, and I was produced with them an event called, at the time, Crave Sydney International Food Festival.
Okay.
Really long name, but we ended up, as part of that event, we shut down the Sydney Harbour Bridge and we put some grass on it and we had picnic. And it was still to this day.
That's no small ask.
It was amazing. I really loved that event. And, you know, just to be able to produce a show of that scale and complexity.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that kind of a challenge.
Did you already have some employees under Visibel, or were you doing the kind of thing that I understand that most producers do, where you essentially use a lot of subcontractors?
So at that time, my company was just me. I was just starting out. So I was working really closely with the government and the the government corporation at the time, and we would hire in people as we needed to produce the work. And then my journey led me to do the Gympie Music Muster.
Yeah.
That was different. And, you know, such a unique experience if you haven't gone to Gympie. and been to the muster. You have to go and see if you can cut it. And, you know, that, again, that was the first time I was approached, and I was the CEO of that festival. And it was in a time where it's run by the Apex Club of Gympie, and at that time they only had male members. And I was a young female, came in to produce their muster.
Yep.
And, you know, a huge, great experience. And really, that was when you asked that question originally about when was the first time I got to really cut my teeth as a producer. That was probably the time where I had to essentially hire the staff in for the whole festival. They wanted to restructure it. I had to do all the programming. I had to work with the community group. So really pull together the whole festival from the beginning, even though it was operating for 30 plus years. And programming in a genre of music that I didn't really know.
Well, maybe that's a good thing, because then you're not biased, or, you know, you just treat it fairly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there's 13 venues at the muster. It's a big show to pull together, and there's everything from the main stage to the Crowbar, which is your late night venue, to the line dancing tent.
Yeah.
So, and then on top of that, you've got all of the patrons who go, and it's such an amazing pilgrimage, because that's what it absolutely is. And they would pilgrim all the way to the Amamore Creek State Forest and set up their, you know, their structures, because they weren't tents, they were like they were structures that people would construct. And you're just blown away by it. So, you know, another experience that you really have to go and do. And, you know, that festival really honed for me the risk and safety and emergency management procedures of festivals. In that same festival, we had the most amount of rain that you could ever have imagined open up. And that festival is built on like a creek that floods in front of the main stage when it rains a lot. So, you know, that it created a
moat around the main stage.
You know, how do you get people out who have, you know, it was a really, at the time I was just, you know, trying to remain calm and make sure that everything happened. But, you know, looking back, it's like, wow, that was a show that I was really able to develop a lot of skills on and grow from. And then I got to buy my own festival, which was the Noosa Jazz Festival. And that's currently having a holiday while I'm in Canberra.
I had no idea that you're behind the Noosa Jazz Festival.
Yeah, so Noosa Jazz, it's been on a little break, because I got the opportunity to also come and produce in its early days the Canberra Writers Festival here. Which I just was like, this is amazing. I really want to be a part of that. So at some point I will like to, you know, go back and restart Noosa Jazz.
Yes, please. Yeah, so I'm there quite often. And I didn't want to own up to this, because me talking about liking jazz, I just thought it might make me sound really pretentious, but I'm quite a huge fan of it. So
it's such an amazing genre, and I love working with those musicians, but I also love bringing it in an accessible format. Yeah.
When you say you created a festival, do you create a pitch which you then essentially provide to a local government, in that case it being the Noosa Council or whoever there, and then they say yes? Or is it more the other way around, that there's a tender for artistic, cultural, musical activity for which you then pitch an idea for?
Multiple different ways. So Noosa Jazz is a private company.
Oh, okay.
And so similar a lot to, say, Splinter in the Grass or Blues Festival or all of those sorts of events, whereas you've got your events, your government-owned events, where you do tender and you do put in for to do the work on them. And then you have, you know, the grey in between, where, you know, it's you somehow just fall onto a project.
Yeah.
But yeah, Noosa Jazz was, it is something that it's a lot of fun to do. And, you know, we do events like tastings on Hastings Street where we do the long lunch down that street and we have that jazz parade. Yeah. And
it's kind of like a main promenade of Noosa.
Yeah. And it's just a beautiful outdoor picnic. And, again, to be able to bring that style of music, as I said, to people to experience that talent. I remember one of the concerts we had, Darren Percival, and, you know, you looked out and he was performing, you know, Shake Your Tail Feather, which you wouldn't classify as a jazz piece or a jazz artist. Or
a piece that everybody knows from Blues Brothers.
Yeah. And there was just the whole breadth. There were these kids dancing with their grandma and it was just such a beautiful sight to see, just to be able to look out. And and I think that, you know, when you think about your why, I still remember when I still do it to this day, the opportunity when you get to glance out and you see the audience really loving and enjoying the musician or the act or the entertainment that you've had a hand in or you've produced, to me that's just the magical moment that I love. And that kind of keeps you going because there's a lot of blood, sweat and many tears that go into bringing these festivals to life. Many, many sleepless days and nights and, you know, a huge amount of stakeholders that you have to work with. And to be able to pull it together and then to see it through and to see the happiness that people have when they get to come, I mean, that's what you do it for. That's certainly what I do it for is I really love producing these shows for the audiences who get to come.
And you know that you're supporting a lot of the artists, that used to be one, two, that you understand and still love. So that's probably very important to you.
Absolutely.
And you've mentioned all the different events that you're involved with. Was there a situation where those events kind of happened pretty much one after another and you felt quite secure in the work that was coming in, or is it a little bit hit and miss and you get like all this work and all of a sudden there's a bit of a break? I guess the reason I'm asking this question is being a lawyer, you know, that's a steady job in the true sense. You get paid every second week, you know where your money is coming from and you can plan around that. People who do creative projects, freelance graphic designers, all the rest of it, kind of move from project to project and sometimes there's a lack of certainty in that. How did you cope with that?
Still coping.
Okay.
So I think you've always got to continue doing your very best work because I always want to give 150% to my clients and you're really as good, that saying that you're only as good as your last show, and that really holds true in our industry. And whilst you're working on the project, you always have to be out looking for the next thing. And that's just the reality, I guess, of business and of working for yourself. It's the risk that you take in going forward to do this. But again, it was that pivotal piece of, you know, setting up your own company and having to be reliant on yourself to find the work and to bring what you want to bring to life.
Because apart from the friend that you had at the Blues Festival, the rest of them were things you pursued directly yourself, right?
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's a networking business. We all help each other and it becomes one of those, I worked with this person and or do you know anybody who is doing something, or, you know, you build those relationships and you maintain those relationships, because I think it's definitely something that the entertainment industry is built on is those strong relationships.
I guess every single time you did something, apart from the lessons you learn from that, if you do it successfully, people get to know your name, you get more contacts. Therefore, when they're looking for a producer in the future and you put in a pitch or what have you, they're probably more likely to be looking at that more seriously. So I guess there's a momentum to it. And every festival that you did, no matter how hard it was, like the one that you mentioned in Gympie, you probably learned a lot from that, but also you probably picked up a lot of contacts, including the contacts of the suppliers that you like working with, that you find trustworthy and all the rest of it.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, it is certainly an industry that is about the relationships that you build, and they're relationships that I've maintained for probably, like yourself, you know, you've got them for 20 plus years, mm-hmm. even longer. Gosh, scary to say that.
You're giving things away here, would you mind? First I'm talking about liking jazz now, this.
Definitely maintaining those relationships. But I really, I guess, really fortunate to I like to work with, there are people that you find as you're doing your shows or you're doing your events that you go, I really click with that person. They understand the vision and you kind of collect them along the way, I guess. We've always got our suppliers that we'll work with, not to say that those doors are closed, because we are always wanting to work and learn and meet new people.
And you're also doing different venues and different areas.
And different states.
You can't keep on taking the same people
around.
Exactly,
yeah. So that ability to meet new people, I always say to part of my other life was lecturing to music students and mm-hmm. to event students.
On copyright law or on
mixture. So copyright, legal studies and events and festivals to, you know, tourism master's students. And so to be able to volunteer. So for those who want to get into the industry, some of the greatest experiences that I've personally have is where you give of your time and you give so freely that's where you get your opportunity.
Yeah.
Because you've done really well as a volunteer and people see that. So to be able to, you know, I guess get out and get your name and get your work exposed is a great way to start.
Was there and is there a lot of competition from other producers, companies for the work that you do?
Absolutely. I mean, but at the same time, I think that the way I like to approach business is that there's enough success for everybody.
Okay.
So in what we do, everybody's got a different strength and there are ways for us all to succeed and collaborate and work together, because that is what we do. We actually have to produce shows. So I certainly like to think that I have a relationship with people that, you know, who in a stricter sense somebody might say, but they're your competitor, and I like to say, oh, no, they're actually my colleague, and I want to be able to grow and support and help the industry. And, you know, I think approaching it in that way is certainly how I like to do business.
Sure.
And it's certainly the way I like to do business with the suppliers and the artists that we get to work with.
So it's interesting, because I don't know why I thought this, but I thought that production, especially of major events, it's not like there's that many of them out there. So I kind of figured that there'd be a lot of competition from a lot of producers who are either getting into the industry or obviously quite experienced, competing against each other to land those things. But it's interesting that you say that actually there are things which, you know, you specialize in and you realize that some others might be better on other things. Yeah, I didn't think that you'd be picking your battle, so to speak, and that actually by doing that you're keeping some kind of a balance within the industry.
Yeah, look, I think that there's plenty of room for everybody and for everyone to be successful. And, you know, I think what the team, your friends, are, what they produce is fantastic. Mm. And I look at that and think that looks like so much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's – they take the risk, they're promoters and producers that bring that to life, and they take the gamble to put that show on. And, you know, I think it's brilliant what they can do and what they do for Canberra, and to be able to bring that entertainment here for us to have access to. And, you know, the same as the Groove and the Move promoters. Yep. And, you know, I think it's great when we're able to find our niche and, you know, to have the festival culture that we do in Australia, I love, because, you know, it's something that's passionate to me. And again, you know, it combines the art and the music and, you know, the outdoor experience and building a small city from scratch, you know, that doing that really is exciting. So there's so many different components from my passion is obviously large scale outdoor festivals. That's what I love to do. The harder the project, the better. and I love doing that. So, you know, if we have to start something from scratch, kind of like what we're doing this year with Floriade, you know, it's fun and, you know, it really makes you think and you put all your skills to the test. But then you've got event producers who specialize in weddings, and my gosh, that would terrify me. That's not an area that I would want to produce.
So for those who are listening who are interested in pursuing this as a career, do you think there's room for more producers? I mean, I'll speak of Canberra because we're quite specific here, but maybe I should probably say more generally. You think it is a career that people can go into and expect to have work and be able to find something?
Oh, look, I think there will be room. If you want something enough, you find a way. And that's true in any industry, and producing festivals and events is no different. You have to be able to persevere and put in the hard yards, because if you wake up and you just think you're going to go on and produce, you know, a show, you might luck it in. But, you know, I remember when I was practicing the piano, and I must have been like 9 or something, in my living room, and I would open the sliding doors to my house in Hawker, and I would just hope that, you know, by some miracle, somebody would walk down the street and discover me. I mean, that is not going to happen. Like, you have to put in the hard yards and practice, and then put yourself out there. And that's where the volunteering comes in, because there's so many different sets of skills that you need to be able to pull together a show and to see the big picture. And you might discover that along your journey that actually I really like just to do the artists, or actually my passion is in the bars, or my passion is in operations and logistics. And for me, my passion is in the big picture. And to be able to see that and how all those pieces of that puzzle fit together. And that's what I love to do.
Exactly. Actually, I was going to ask you about this. I get the feeling that out of all the people that I know that have some kind of involvement with events, large scale usually, they're all very good at being able to, one, see the big picture, two, not get overwhelmed by stressful moments, and three, being able to take a whole bunch of detail and organize it in such a way that at least in your head, it's perfectly straightforward and organized and clear. The point being is those three qualities is what strikes me as being the ones that are needed, or at least the ones that people have that are very good in producing. Would I be right about that?
I would say that you are. You've absolutely summed it up beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I think that you do have to be able to carry a large amount of information around in your head, because you need to be able to connect the dots or make the connections that might not be obvious, because that's where you get the, I guess, that magic of the show. So
which must go on.
Yeah, well, exactly. So to be able to connect people that might not necessarily be a good pairing, or, you know, how do you do that, or how do you solve this problem that we've never encountered before?
I will just mention one thing about something that I've done in the past, just to make a point of this. When I started working at the NGA, we would have this really large blockbuster event launches, usually once or twice a year, depending on how many of the big shows that we had on. 600 people, lots of dignitaries, the Prime Minister was two of them, the Governor General was one of them. So there was this very high-end organization of people, the entertainment, the expectations on top of that and everything else. The very first one I had to do, I was, of course, nervous like anybody else is. And you might have a briefing book and you might have everything sorted out, but you know that things can go wrong. That the pleasure of fixing something that was about to go wrong gave me this kind of high. And all of a sudden, I realized that the next time we put something on, I weirdly started looking forward to that pressured moment where something was going to go a bit haywire and I had to work my way out of it very quickly. And then, in fact, that was the fun part. I get the feeling that producers at that end are kind of suckers for punishment in some way because we weirdly want things to be thrown at us. It's that element of loving the stress in some really weird way.
Yeah, I think so. I also think it's just a way of dealing with the pressure. Mm. And I guess I approach it with that. We have adopted the Begin With The End in mind, which is from Stephen Covey's book. And that's really kind of Visibel's, I guess, mantra, and it's certainly something that we carry through in all that we do, which is when we're producing a show, we begin with the end in mind. So I can see the show clearly in my mind, and then it's working towards being practiced and having all the processes and the procedures and the steps and all of the things that we need to have in place and having all that prepared so that when, not if, but when something does go wrong, you are able to respond to that calmly.
Yeah. And actually, it's maybe this is the other side of it. Even if you're freaking out on the inside, you don't show it. And in fact, learning how to be calm in very stressful situations is actually a really, really good gift. And nothing prepares you more for that than, once again, running a festival or do a production or something like that, or an event, and having to work through problems and solve them calmly and quickly, you know, and flawlessly.
Well, there's also the things where you know what is supposed to happen in your head because you've lived and breathed it for a year and a half, however long it's taken you to get to that point. So you have that very clear picture of how things are supposed to look and feel, but your audience doesn't. They haven't lived and breathed every second of that. Mm. So, you know, something that in our mind might feel like a catastrophe, that, you know, that this act is running late, or, you know, my gosh, we've got to change this person or this person's not. In the grand scheme of the show, it will be okay because you can resolve that and you can shuffle some things around, and yep. It's really just in your mind that you have placed the expectation on yourself that it's going to look this way. Mm. You know, we had this year at Enlighten Festival, we had balloon glow and the weather was just not on our side. I mean, it's been a horrendous year, but yeah, the balloon, I had it in my mind, it was, I had it all planned and I knew exactly how I wanted it and I wanted this song to play and I could see it. And then, you know, when it came to be that it was just a struggle to get the balloons up because the weather and the winds weren't on our side, I had to let go of that vision that I had. You know, I wanted it to be amazing for the audience and, you know, they had a good time. Was it like every other balloon glow? No. Will it be next year? Yes. Yeah. You know, so I just think you just adapt. And
well, since you've mentioned a quote before, one that I quite liked that someone gave me was, there's always a solution, you just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
And it's very true that when something goes wrong, that moment of panic, the way you get around it is not focusing on the repercussions of whatever has gone wrong, but rather focusing on what is the solution. And thinking through a number of them and then going, this is the best one, let's go.
Absolutely.
Which, once again, see, I'm even getting excited talking about that. It's it's fun being put under that kind of pressure. And maybe the reason I keep on going back to that is when I've spoken to specifically people wanting to get into it, but being afraid of the stress involved with putting an event on. But they have the vision, they have the drive and everything else, but they're like, oh, you know what? I don't know if I'm psychologically can stand it. Maybe this isn't the kind of career for me. What I'm trying to say is you will actually end up liking that. And every time you do something and it gets, there are problems, you learn from them and you get better. And the better you get, the more confident you get. And you realize the solutions in things. So don't be scared off by the pressure that comes with production. Or, I mean, I think it certainly is.
I mean, I think some of the lasting pieces that have stuck with me is if you've got 10 minutes to make a decision, you need to think for 9 of them. So that's number one that I try to do. And it's really hard. Like, you're under the pressure and adrenaline's pumping, but just to be able to steady yourself and take a few deep breaths and really put that in place. But also pull in your key people. And when you're doing an event, it's very rare that you're doing it by yourself. You have amazing people and a team around you. And, you know, some of the most critical decisions, that's why you've got your emergency control center. That's why you've got your senior managers. So pull those people in and do exactly what you said, which is, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And canvas those ideas. And if the decision ultimately rests with you as to what to do, make that decision, execute it. And then if more information comes to light in the next 5 minutes, don't be so proud as to not, you know, change the decision. Because if you've got more information and better stuff comes to hand, great, that's what we're doing now. We're changing, because you have to adapt and you have to be able to respond and receive the information and then continue to progressively make the best decision at the time with the information that you've got. So that's certainly how I like to approach it.
In terms of people wanting to get into this industry, so they might be doing university studies related to it, what do you think is the best avenue? Should they volunteer for work in festivals just to kind of understand the back end of it? What's your suggestion?
Yes, please volunteer. Not everyone is suited to it. And, you know, similar to how I discovered I wasn't really suited to being a lawyer, not everyone's going to be suited to the pressure or to the long hours or to the peaks and troughs. So at a festival, you want the quiet times, because that means that everything is happening, people have arrived, you know, the show's happening, and it should be quiet. When it's not, you're normally dealing with a problem. So you need to be able to deal with those peaks and troughs, because it's not all high pace. If you're doing a, you know, 10-day festival, 30-day festival, it's not all high pace. I mean, we'd all just burn out if it was. You don't want to have, you know, 5 sets of dramas a day for a 30-day festival, because, you know, we would all go and practice emergency medicine. That would probably be the thing. Definitely get out there and see if it is something you want to do. And the more that you have that opportunity and ability to expose yourself to it, you'll be able to see pretty quickly where you fit. Because not everyone's going to like it. You might think you do, but you might actually discover you don't. Or you might get there and you think, this is the best thing I've ever done in my entire life and I can't wait to keep going.
I guess it might make a difference too. So for example, if we take Floriade, people who might want to volunteer with that might just happen to like that festival. They just might happen to like flowers. So they're surrounded by something they really like, and on top of that, they're doing work that they find enjoyable because they're talking to people, helping people around the grounds and all the rest of it. I think maybe the truth is to persevere and succeed, you kind of have to take yourself out of that.
Yeah.
In other words, do a festival for which the subject matter is probably not of interest to you. See whether you love the buzz of the actual workings of.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's great advice.
We kind of talked a lot about almost the negative side of the work that you do, which we've turned into a positive. But maybe let's talk about the positives. You've mentioned before that the biggest highlights for you are A, knowing that once everything's going smoothly, is going to the vision that, that you've got in your head, but really seeing the reactions of the people to the event itself and the experience that they're having. What else are the big highlights for you in, when you put an event?
Yeah, look, there's a lot. Most of mine are really centered around the audience, because that without the audience, I guess we don't have an event. But, you know, so I really try to design the event that they can engage with and connect with, and you know, it takes time to grow and develop events, regardless of how long they've been in existence for. But the other highlight, there's lots, but one of the key highlights for me is stemming back to music, mm-hmm. And musicians and performers. So I love giving new and emerging talent an opportunity to be able to perform on stage for the first time. And I know you and I kind of share that passion to develop music talent and give them that, I guess, that some of the first opportunities and exposure to a large crowd. I really love that, because that's how you hone your craft. The same with artists. So we get to work a lot with the creative artists, and for them to be able to come and showcase their work, and to be able to give people an avenue to do that and to connect with people through their work, I really enjoy. I love working with all the stakeholders. There are many hundreds of people that we get to work with, and I guess you have to like that, because that's my job, is to be working with the stakeholders that we work with.
And by stakeholders, that could be anyone from government, from the councils,
the police, partners,
well,
yes, sponsors. Mm. Yep. You know, to community groups, to, I mean, there's so many people that form a part of the event. So I really like that fostering of community, because yep. when you work on a large festival, everybody that works there, you want to feel that sense of community, festival family. You know, it sounds pretty naff, but that's sort of, I really love it. I love the fact that you create this whole different world for a period of time, and you've got this very large team of people who have all put their heart and soul into bringing it to life. And I love that. I love what people can do together. And that's probably why I'm more drawn to the large scale events, because it is a massive, massive team effort of people that come together to pull these things off. And it's just so great when you look at it and you think, oh, yay, people are here. Yay, thank you for coming. You know, it's pretty simple really for me. The highlights is I love the artists having an opportunity, the audience having an opportunity, and I love creating something from nothing with the huge team of people that we work with.
Well, you know, you've created Visibel out of almost nothing in a sense. Actually, I was going to ask this. If you kind of go back to the period when you did your very first blues festival, did you at that point think that's where I'm going to be by, you know, 2020? Or are you kind of quite surprised and pinch yourself that you've managed to actually make this go so far?
I feel really lucky to be having the opportunities that I've had. And it's, you know, it's a lot of hard work to be, you know, in this position. There's a huge amount of time and work and, you know, putting everything in to get here. But I feel really lucky to be able to work on the events that I've had the opportunity to work on. Did I think that I would be here? No. I love the journey that I've been on, and it's been filled with ups and downs and, you know, crazy adventures along the way, some that I absolutely cannot share on this podcast. But, you know, it's so great. I feel really fortunate, and I love working with the team at Events ACT to produce Floriade and Enlighten with them. growing up in Canberra and then moving away for, you know, a period of time, and then being able to come back and start up the Canberra Writers Festival, and then do that for the first 2 years of the Writers Festival's life, and then to be able to move into Floreat. I mean, that's just to be able to go and work on developing Floreat and working on Enlighten is fantastic, because it's that pride of this is my home, and these are our festivals that, you know, I've grown up with, and I'm really proud to be a part of it and shaping its next part of its life cycle.
So I'm guessing by that answer that essentially you didn't think it was going to be where it is now. Maybe you thought it was going to be a bit of a slower road, so to speak, but it seemed to have picked up pretty well.
You need to pat yourself
on the back for where you got to. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say.
Thank you. Look, there's so many things that I guess like everyone, you know, you've got so many goals and aspirations. I want to make sure that after COVID I still have business like everybody. I want to continue working on festivals until I'm very, very old. I love it. I want to go back.
So you've got a long time to go.
Heaps of time. I want to produce my own festivals. I love working with other people to produce their festivals. I want to continue to grow my company. I want to write, you know, a TV show based on some of these stories, you know. It would be a lot of fun. So there's heaps of things that I want to do. But I guess through my journey, the thing that I love is the business side of the industry, and I love being able to produce these events and grow them and shape them and then hand the baton over to the next producer, because I don't think you should, personally, I don't think you should stay with an event for 30, 40 years, because I think it needs to have different life and vision and different energy. You know, it just needs to have a cycle.
That makes a lot of sense. That actually goes back to the point you were saying before, that rather than hogging something, you eventually release that because you've got other people in the scene who might want to produce it, and they might do a great job by putting a new fresh taste on it or fresh feel to it.
Absolutely.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So once again, it goes to that whole caring aspect.
It comes back to the event and, you know, what is the best thing for the event and for the audience to do. And I think every producer wants to be able to leave the work that they did in a place that's better than where it was, and then you hand it over, and then that next person produces it to the next level, and then the next level, and it can continue to grow and evolve, because that's what I think it's all certainly about. So I'm excited to be a part of, you know, Floreat and Enlighten in this time. I'm really excited. I have this amazing team and this amazing client that we work with, and we do a festival up in Kakadu National Park called Taste of Kakadu, and that probably, you know, one of the smaller events that we did, by no means the easiest, it probably really challenging to produce a show in a really remote location, but that festival and connecting with the community and the Indigenous people of the land there, and being able to see the love they have for country and the connection and to the place and to the food and the just everything about it is just such an amazing experience. Like, I am very excited to be able to go back and do that show when we can, because it's certainly such a wonderful experience to be a part of.
Speaking of which, because there are so many different festivals and things that you're involved with, how does someone follow you on that and figure that out? I mean, yeah, give us a plug.
Gosh, I'm a producer. I like to be behind the scenes. So, look, we've got a website which we're in the process of actually updating, which is exciting, and Facebook and Instagram. But, yeah, I find Instagram probably a channel I can understand and use. And I guess our events are so visual. And again, it's an opportunity to share the great work that our photographers do, and they take such beautiful photos. And just that opportunity as well, where you see all the other people who take sensational photos, to be able to share their work as well. So I love the visual medium of Instagram, but yeah, definitely follow us on there or drop us an email say hi. And yeah.
And it's at Visibel?
It's Visibel_festivals_events.
So there we go.
Yeah, because I forgot the password because I'm very old.
No, you're not. So. We discussed this. You're not, and you've got a long way to go, and there's a lot of things you got to do, including producing two television shows, apparently.
Correct, yes. Yes. I'm up for collaboration on TV producing.
Sounds great. Well, if you need anyone to write the score for it, the lead-in track, I'm your person.
We know. Yeah, absolutely. We have your number. You know it.
Sounds great. Well, maybe we'll kind of leave it at that. One thing that I did want to mention is maybe from the public perspective, how do you pick up on the public feedback on things? How do you kind of filter through that, and how do you pick those up and go, that's a great one to put in, that one I can't consider?
We really like and I think you learn best when you get the feedback. A lot of the things, as you said, we probably agree with, but there are reasons why we're not able to, and we're actually probably not able to tell everybody, because that's commercial in confidence information.
Of course.
Or, you know, we might not have the budget to do it, or we might be constrained by many other things. And it's not that we haven't thought about it, and you know, we might 100% agree with the feedback, but as you said, that there may just be nothing that we can do. There are great ideas that can come, and we can certainly, you know, that's the beauty. I guess everyone comes and they do see it, and your work is literally out there, and people really are not afraid to tell you how well they think you've done or not done in some cases. And, you know, you can always improve and continue to grow, and sometimes the change that you want to create just takes time, because, you know, if you take a Band-Aid off too quickly, it hurts. And if something's been operating for a long time, then you want to, I guess one of the learnings I had is you need to go a little bit slower, because you don't want to pivot too fast, because you lose a whole lot of people.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, the feedback is part and parcel with what you do, so you really have to develop a thick skin. I mean, early on in my career, I'd be in tears sometimes with what people would say, because sometimes people are really personally attack you.
Yeah.
But then, you know,
and that's because probably their experience doesn't match up with the experience they were hoping for.
Absolutely.
And, you know.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's the same in any job. And there are great bits of feedback that people give, and really great suggestions that they want to see developed. And the ones that I really love, particularly when you're doing the programming of events, is, you know, who do people want to come and see? I mean, that's really helpful feedback, because I'm not doing it for me. We're doing it for the audience. So yeah. I'd love to hear what, you know, people, I love that kind of feedback. Or if there's areas that they think on the site were dark, or, you know, what could we do here? I really value that feedback. And I think it's just, we're all guilty of it, but it's just remembering that there are people that have really put their heart and soul into it. Not just me, like there are heaps and heaps of people. And it's just maybe to deliver that feedback with kindness.
It's very true. Well, thank you for that. I think we've kind of come to the end of the podcast. If we got this right, people might have got an insight into what producing anyway is like. Two, maybe the kind of personality one needs to be a producer, the good and the bad side of it, and ultimately the career path that one can take in it. So I really thank you for being candid and open and being part of this conversation.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. It's been fun.
It's been a real pleasure. And I'm sure I'll see you at a festival sooner or later. And let me know if you've got any tickets free to that Noosa Jazz Festival once it goes back up.
Once I resurrect it. Absolutely.
All right. Well, it was lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye. So there you have it. That was Vicky Cotter from Visible Events talking about her world and the world of programming major events. I really hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, I would love to hear from you, so get in touch with me on Instagram at BehindTheBioPodcast, or if you prefer, email ashley_ferrode@outlook.com. Once again, I'd love to thank the guys at the Coordinate Group in Canberra for making this podcast possible, and I hope you can join me for the next episode. See you then.